Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Welcome everybody to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler. Excited to be here with you. Man, my most exciting time of the week. I love being on the show here. I'm really excited about the topics today too. Some good stuff here. For those that have never listened to the show, welcome. Excuse me. Sorry about that. My name is Mark Kohler. I'm your host, CPA, attorney, author, entrepreneur. And just trying to live the dream like you. It's hard some days, it's exciting others and frustrating others. It's just a little of everything, isn't it? But that's okay. It's a lifestyle choice and we're controlling our own destiny. It's exciting. It's what's fun about entrepreneurship. And I have a topic about that here in a moment I want to bring up about that entrepreneurship point. And I also just want to hit a couple introductory points for those that haven't had a chance yet to look at the newsletter blog post today. Got some good stuff out there. There's no important tax deadlines this month. They're all over, so take it easy. Now, for those of you that are on extension, we're busy as little beavers back there in the office working on tax returns. I'd say probably 50 to 60% of our clients extend. There's nothing wrong with that. Reduce your chances of an audit. We have new clients coming over to us daily that extended with their old accountant and have seen the light. Woo! And are coming our way. So just reach out to the office. But if you're on extension, get your paperwork in. The sooner the better. Before you know it, September 15th, October 15th will be here. So just keep working on your books. And if you need help with the QuickBooks project, call the office and they'll hook you up. A couple good blog articles there. I'm on the second of a three-part series on some asset protection that I really have taken a fresh approach to the topic of asset protection after writing the book and speaking on it for years. It's always nice to just put it in an article that makes sense. And I want to let you know, I have faith in you as my followers, my client listening here. Entrepreneur Magazine wanted me to really, and this is not taken away from Entrepreneur Magazine, the editors over there are awesome, but they really wanted me to dumb down the article and it just got cut and cut and it needs to be simpler and bullet points. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this article doesn't even look like what I started with. So on my asset protection series, it's also running in entrepreneur.com. This, my friends, on my blog and what you got in the newsletter today is the unadulterated, uncut version, and you're going to love it. So I have faith in you that you can understand it. You can soak it up. And, you know, it's not that hard, but it's crazy. When I start writing articles for Entrepreneur, they teach me that I have to write at an eighth grade level. Isn't that nuts? Got to write at an eighth grade level? What's our country coming to? You can't write an intellectual, I think, inspiring article without having to dumb it down. So I don't do that to you. In my blog, you get the best. So there you go. Check it out. Good stuff. Now, I also wanted to just make a point on this entrepreneurism. It's my little message of the day on the newsletter. The title of it was, Don't Quit Your Job to Start Your Small Business. Now, I know some of you may think, gosh, Mark, you believe in entrepreneurism. How could you be telling people don't quit their job? I mean, I thought you were all about people. Quit your job. Live your dream. Start a small business. Hey, slow down, Tiger. What I'm talking about is starting a small business on the side and then building the revenue and the foundation so that you can, if you choose, to quit your day job and start a small business full-time, run a small business full-time. I want you to start a small business. I just don't know if I want you to run it full-time, at least initially. Take your time. There's no rush. I had another phone call with a client this morning that was just her and her husband besides themselves because their business isn't doing well, very frustrated, and One of the spouses had quit their job to start the business, and it didn't turn out. And now it's scary. That stable income, one whole half of their income's gone, and the business didn't produce. And so take your time. Start a small business on the side. Don't feel like you have to rush. Folks, it is a marathon, not a sprint. It's a lifestyle, not a get-rich-quick scheme. So hang in there. All right. Now, for those that know my show well, we're going to hit some tips here real quick. I've got a special guest with a new book out. I'm excited to introduce him to you. You'll know his name when I say it because he's been on the show before. And I also have a panel, a couple extra experts to join me here at the bottom of the hour to talk about avoiding a lawsuit and winning a lawsuit if you're in a battle. I mean, this is huge. We talk about all these asset protection schemes. Oh, I got to put this in that structure and this structure. But what's the good avoid a lawsuit in the first place stuff? Well, we're going to bust it down today. You're going to love it. So before we get there, though, I'm going to bring out a regular guest on our show. We've got Dustin Johnson, our Chief Operations Officer, CPA, in the home office of Southern Utah, enjoying that beautiful spring weather. This is the time you want to live in Cedar City. Dustin, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be here, Mark. Thank you.
You bet. How is the weather over there? Is it nice and pretty?
You know, it's beautiful. It's beautiful right now. It was a little cold the last few days, a little wind, but today is just gorgeous.
I love it. Awesome. Well, thanks for finding a few minutes to be with us. And folks, if you ever need a tax write-off this summer and you're going to go visit the national parks down in southern Utah, come stop by the office, meet with your accounting team, huh? Knock out two birds with one stone, take a little write-off. This is that's what we're all about, a little bit of travel and business. So think about it. Go visit Dustin on his own turf there. Dustin, what tip have you got for us this week?
Well, perfect, Mark. What I wanted to talk about, you know, real estate's starting to pick up. We've had, we talk about that quite a bit. And I want to talk about some ways to save taxes on either rental property that's been held onto it for a long time, or you came across a property and there were a lot of gains in it that you held onto for more than a year, and you don't want to pay taxes all at once. So I wanted to talk about either a 1031 exchange on that property to kind of defer those taxes a little bit longer.
I love it. The 1031 exchange. Now, these are, you know, we thought these disappeared. I mean, when the market fell in real estate, 1031 exchange companies, they were like carnage on the side of the road. And everybody's like, 1031, I don't need a 1031. But I think you hit the nail on the head now. When you now have a property that has equity, which is happening, it's coming back. 1031, tell us how they work, Dustin. I like it. I'm glad you brought this up.
Well, you know, part of the reason, I guess I'll go back just a step. Part of the reason we like real estate so much is that depreciation, the deferring of the tax that we're going to have to recognize on these properties. And so what we want to do is continue that deferral into a new property. For example, you know, I talk about all this equity we have in a house. Maybe we want to jump into a bigger property, but we don't want to pay taxes on the one we're selling, so that we can just buy into a new one. So the IRS set up this code section 131, which allows you to sell one property and in a short time span purchase another property without paying tax on the gain, kind of rolling it all into the next property.
Okay, so the tax deferred exchange, sell a property, buy a new one of equal or greater value. And now I know you can sell three and buy one. You could sell one and buy three. You could go either direction. What qualifies as real estate, Dustin? That's one of the most common questions I get. People say, you know, I'm thinking of a 1031 exchange. Do I have to sell my duplex and buy another duplex?
Well, as long as there's a, I'll say it's got a stove, it's got a toilet, it's got a bed. You know, you can. You can be pretty pretty general in this. It needs to be a business real estate type property.
Primary. You can sell a duplex and buy farmland. You can, as long as it's real estate. And I like that. I mean, it's you can sell Mississippi swampland and buy a downtown LA high rise. So I think that's a point that I'd like people to know, is that it doesn't have to be like-kind real estate. It just has to be real estate for real estate. So if you have that beach house that grandma left you and it's too expensive to maintain, you could sell it and buy three fourplexes in Oklahoma, hopefully not in Tornado Alley. And geez, what news this week? Gosh, I can't believe that just came to my mind too. I was watching the news this morning, and it's just all my kids were crying this morning. They're like, "Why do people live there where there's tornadoes?" Like, I don't know. So I don't know if you
Pretty
want a
devastating.
1031 exchange into a Tornado Alley house, but oh boy, that little tangent here, but our prayers go out to those folks. But anyway, yeah, you can exchange property, doesn't matter what state and all that. What give us some of the timing rules, Dustin. I mean, how long do I have to identify my new property and then close?
Wow, way to just set that up there, Mark. That was beautiful. A little softball pitch to me. No, you've got 45 days. 45 days is your time to identify a new property. And
So
then you
what, the
have to
day I
close.
sell. So
From the
I
day
sell
that
my
you sell.
property. Okay.
Yep, you've got 45 days to find the new properties. And you don't have to buy these properties. You have to have a few options. So you could come across with four or five different identified properties within this 45-day period, and just kind of make a written little log saying, "These are the properties that I am looking at for my 1031 exchange." And then within 180 days, you have to close on one or three or however many of those properties that you want to complete the 1031 exchange.
Well, okay, got it. And of course, I know many of you that have done a 1031 exchange were simplifying it for time's sake. We could do a whole radio show on 1031 exchange. I know some of you probably have some questions here just listening to the show. But here's the bottom line point, if I could summarize. And then, Dustin, if you want to take make a final point as well. But here's the deal. Folks, when you have a fix and flipper rehab that you're, turning, you cannot do a 1031 exchange. A 1031 exchange is for property you've held typically 9 to 12 months. Typically, it's been rented or it's for investment. Any sort of fix and rehab type property is not going to qualify for a 1031 exchange. But for any of you out there that have appreciated property and a rental property and you've held it at least 12 months and you want to sell it and not pay any tax, you can roll that property into another one or another three or split it five ways, whatever. There's all sorts of machinations. And we have a 1031 exchange accommodation service at our office. We can guide you through the 1031. We're very, very affordable. I think it's like $250 or $500. $500 for the whole 1031 or $250 per closing. It's very simple and affordable. And Deborah Stanton in our office is somebody you'd want to talk to about some of the nuances. She's our manager of the accommodation service. That's Deborah Stanton. But Dustin, I mean, I think that's what I'd want to say. What's your final point on this 1031? What's the takeaway for everyone here?
Well, the final point, and I think something that's incredibly important when you're doing a 1031 exchange, is you can't receive any funds as the seller of your property. You can't be in control of any funds. You need to have this a qualified intermediary. So you need to hire somebody else to kind of take the equity from the sale of the first house and hold on to it until you have the second house that those funds can be dropped into. If any of those funds come under your control, in your hand, your bank account, you can lose your 1031 exchange. So it's important to do it the right way and make sure your real estate agent understands how to do a 1031 and you use a qualified intermediary to make this work so that you can defer those gains.
And look, we open up these little trails of thoughts. I want to say this. You can take money after the transaction closes. That's called boot. So, folks, if you want to walk away with a few dollars and take a cruise in the Caribbean this summer, that's fine. But you'd pay tax on that boot. But to clarify what Dustin's saying is, in the transaction, in the heat of the 1031, you're going to have to use an accommodator to kind of act as the escrow for this whole little transaction. By the way, I've shot a video on this on YouTube. For those that haven't been to my YouTube channel, in the newsletter every week I shoot two 2-minute tax tips. This week was if you have to disinherit a child, how do you do it? Last week was how do you put your pet in your estate plan? Boy, that sounded bad. Let me get this straight. I'm telling you how to put your dog or cat in your estate plan and how to exclude your child. Well, anyway, that I have those meetings. Okay, so, but anyway, I've got folks with videos on my YouTube channel that you might want to watch. I just shot one on 1031 exchanges that summarizes this as well. But Dustin, thank you so much for coming on the show. Great little tip, folks. Again, a little morsel of info that could be very helpful to you in your investing this year. So thanks, Dustin.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
You bet. Folks, if you want to get a hold of Dustin, of course, just call the main number at the accounting firm. You can get a consult with him specifically. He's our chief operations officer and CPA that reviews many, many returns and works with, I know, many of you that are already longtime clients and listeners of the show. That's Dustin Johnson. Okay, now I'm excited to bring on, before we get to our topic of the hour, we've got a little side note, a little feature here, part of the show. See, I don't have a producer that tells me all these little keywords to use. This is just me and Lisa, and I can't say enough about Lisa Owens back in the office running the studio. Many of you that call in and have a question or comment, talk to Lisa. Lisa, thanks for all you do. So she's my Robin, you know, of the Stern Show here. I should call her out more and kind of have some banter with her. Maybe we'll work that into the show more. But anyway, I want to bring out a guest that's been on our show before. His name is Jay Massey. This guy is incredible. He's got a new book out, and I'll let him tell you the title here, but a little bit more of an introduction. He's got over a decade of experience in the financial services and real estate. He's been speaking around the country. He owns, well, he just texted me this morning. I've got to say this. He's an investor that I just look up to, and he is now, I think, up to 386 doors. Now, he likes multi-units, so you can't say buildings, 386 homes, but those are 386 doors, and his story is just inspirational. I'm not kidding. There were tears shed when I had him on our show earlier this year. Many of you can go into the archives there on iTunes or Blog Talk Radio and listen to that show. But without any further ado, I want to bring out Jay Massey and talk about this new book for a moment that you've got out. Jay, welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Mark. I'm glad to be here. And again, thank you for the kind words.
Well, you bet. We've all been waiting for you to take that brilliant brain of yours and put it in writing. So, what the heck? What's the title of this book, man?
Well, we're starting it in pieces. That's been the challenge, is that we're taking one piece of the brain, as you say, and it's simply titled Investing Made Easier, and it's about wholesaling, because that's how I started out in the, you know, real estate industry. For those of you who haven't heard, really quickly, you know, my wife and I started in a very dire situation. She has a condition known as hyperemesis, which means she couldn't eat or drink. I had a punctured lung with asthma, could not walk and talk. We were technically squatting in bank-owned property, homeless, when I ran into Mark, and he was able to, you know, help us out from the legal and tax side and understand how to get our act together with a few other great individuals. We've been able to construct a real estate portfolio across many different states, and I get the question all the time, how do you do wholesaling? So I figured, you know, if I distilled that information into an ebook, that would help.
Well, I love it. Now, so I'm going to just ask you this. I'm probably going to catch you off guard a little bit, but literally last night, my daughter was in the car with me. We were driving home, and she said, she worked at the office with me yesterday. I've got my teenagers working here. She was scanning, shredding paper, doing all the good stuff. And she said, Dad, I want to buy a piece of real estate. I want to do some real estate. She hears me. I'm talking about it. I'm talking about entrepreneurship. And she's got her own little small internet business. So she's got her little own business going. But she wants this rental property thing, because yesterday I was focused on this rental a day thing with some little project. And she goes, how much money do I have to do this? And can I start, you know, with a property and a deal of some sort? She didn't say the word wholesaling, but I knew that's what she meant. So, Jay, I'm going to ask you, if the topic of your book is Investing Made Easier, is this something that I could even have my teenage girl, 16, 17 years old, read? What do you think?
Well, not only is it something that she could read, I put in there literally a step-by-step process complete with actual the documents that I created to help me do it. So you've got inside the book, it's very, very short and very direct. It's not flowery and fluffy. I'm straight to the point. I want you to be able to begin to understand what it's going to take to build that buyer's list and get in front of enough people to be able to make a transaction happen. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, that's what it's about. I'm, you know, I, like you, again, I'm trying to follow in your footsteps. I'm taking my daughter with me for the first time to actually visit all of our apartment buildings out in Memphis, because we're having this, you know, event with, you know, some NBA-related individuals and for our tenants and tenant base out there. And, you know, she's been asking me the same question. You know, if I'm the white guy writing the book, she's like, Dad, when can I buy a rental property? So I'm just like, okay, how about we start with an apartment complex or something? So that's kind of, you know, where I'm trying to help her go. And this book is
okay. Let me get this straight. No.
Yeah.
Now hold it. With your teenager, instead of saying, honey, let's go out and buy this little single family home in this neighborhood, you said, honey, let's just start with an apartment complex.
Yeah. Well,
good.
I
like that, Jay. That's impressive. All right.
My wife always says, go big or go home. So, you know, we it's kind of what we do.
You're funny. You know what? Okay, I'm going to throw this out here. We got to do lunch.
Yes.
I'll bring my daughter. You bring yours. Let's form an LLC for our two daughters, and let's turn them loose, dude. Not at the mall. Not on a Friday. I'm just saying, turn them loose on some investing. Let's get them to read the book.
They
can write a report. There you go. All right. Well, I love it. So the title of the new book, Investing Made Easier. Before you tell us about your event this weekend, and real quick, how do people get a hold of this book? Where's the best place? And I guess you're offering a download for free right now?
Yes, absolutely.
I just saw that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's cashflowdiary.com. It's right there. It's on the homepage, cashflowdiary.com. While you're there, you can hit the links for the YouTube channel, because there's about 2 or 3 hours worth of video there. There's about another 4 hours under the training. And we also have the podcast going as well. And then you can just put your email in and you'll get a copy of the book within minutes, and you'll be well on your way to learning the step-by-step process that I still use. The same process. I mean, when in the book we talk about using it for single-family houses, but it'll work for land, it'll work for commercial, you know, retail, office. I've done it with apartment buildings. It doesn't really matter. The process is the same. So, again, cashflowdiary.com is where they would need to go to get that.
Cashflowdiary.com. All right. Well, I know what report my daughter's going to write this weekend on, so this will be good. And then real quick, Jay, you said for those that are in the Memphis area, if you want to hang out with some NBA players, what is it you're doing this weekend?
Well, basically what we've got going on is we've got the a basketball camp and clinic. We ran into some great individuals out here in California who referred us to, you know, some great people who've been able to help us associate with some NBA-related individuals. And we pulled together some sponsors. You know, I personally called over to the Rich Dad organization and was able to get them to help us, and Basketball Club International, McDonnell Insurance, and Victor Donaldson. As well as the City of Memphis and Innovation Church. I mean, all of those individuals were coming together this weekend to be able to we're going to hold a camp on one side where the kids will be learning how to basketball, and on the other side, I'll be instructing the kids on the cash flow board game. So we've got the board games donated. It was very exciting. We're looking forward to, again, spreading the very same information that you talk about all the time, but now we're going to take it to, you know, where I do business, and it's going to be around the corner from one of our buildings, and we're involving the community as much as possible. So I'm very, and that's what my daughter's going to be introduced to, as seeing what Daddy finally does. So I'm excited about it.
Well, that's awesome. I'm really kind of upset you didn't invite me to be an instructor, not for the cash flow, but for the basketball, because dude, I can hoop. So I mean, I could show up, I could you know, teach the kids a few moves, you know.
Right.
You know, I could.
Well,
they call me the bus driver. You know, I'll take them to school. So,
no doubt.
Anyway, so,
no, doubt.
No, I'm not. Dude, I'm not kidding. Okay, I didn't even plan on sharing this on the show ever. let me throw this out. Okay, this is 2 weeks ago, right after work. In fact, I'm probably going to head over there at 5 o'clock today. I'll head over to the 24-Hour Fitness in Irvine, for Irvine Center Drive. Anybody local here, you want to shoot some hoops down there, open court, 24-Hour Fitness at 5 o'clock, all right? So I'm out there. This 2 weeks ago. I show up on the court, you know, I'm feeling kind of frisky, you know. I'm like, hey, I can hang with these guys, you know. And there's you know, it's all, I guess, now that in retrospect, I notice they're all kind of young college guys. But I show up, and you know, everybody shoots. They get their teams, and we're manning up. And this guy comes up, and he's like, I got old school here. And I'm like, who's old school? What are you talking about? I was like, I got bad knees. I need to guard old school. And I'm like, that's my nick. So I was nicknamed old school for this whole pickup game. It was kind of sad. But anyway, well, enough digression. Jay, you are awesome. I am so excited about what you're doing. And folks, I just looked it up. So if you haven't listened to the show where we talked to Jay for a full, the bulk of the hour, so 40, 45 minutes, where he talks about how they were literally, and I almost get choked up here, literally living out of their car 5 years ago homeless because of their medical situation. And this is after Jay was a successful financial planner. They lost their home, and they're living out of their car for a month to 2 months, and how he turned it around, and now he owns 368 doors. It's amazing, and he's writing a book. Folks, you got to listen to that show. It's on Blog Talk Radio. The date of the show is May 29th. I can't believe it's been over a year, Jay. It's literally almost a year to this week you were on the show.
Wow.
Gosh, it seems like yesterday. So that was 529. That's May 29th of 2012. You can get it on iTunes. You can get it on Blog Talk Radio. Listen to that show. Folks, you will love it. It's very inspirational. And good luck with your basketball camp. If you need me to shoot a YouTube video and show you some moves, I can help with that. And the cash flow game, I love it. My 10-year-old, Molly, she loves to play cash flow. Folks, if you haven't bought cash flow, you can go to Amazon.com, put in cash flow for kids, and it teaches them how to build a business, invest in property, and manage their cash flow. It's the greatest little game. We own it ourselves, and Molly likes to play it on Sunday afternoon. So, Jay, thanks for coming on the show. You rock, man.
Thank you. I'm glad to have you. Looking forward to having you on our show sometime soon. So that would be great, too.
Just call me. Just give me a buzz, dude. You rock. All right, folks. That's right, Jay Massey. Get to cashflowdiary.com. All right. All right. Well, what an honor to have him come out here on the show. Okay, now, folks, now we come to the heart of the hour here where we dive into our topic that we've all been waiting for. Now, this is important because, you know, I talk about asset protection. I believe it's critical for us as Americans. We're in a litigious society now. We're trying to build wealth. We're trying to protect it. Well, why don't we just talk about avoiding a lawsuit to begin with? Rather than try to protect my assets and act like an idiot, why don't I just try to avoid a lawsuit in the first place? And by doing so, maybe find a little more success in my career and the people I interact with and operate at a higher standard, or I don't know, maybe there's some strategies here. Well, folks, I've brought together two individuals I'm excited to hear with who have a tremendous amount of court experience. First, let me introduce our new member to a new guest on our show, Tyson Hottinger. We're excited to have him here with us. He's here local to Southern California. He's at the where do I start? Okay, so he's in IP litigation, which is very interesting when you're trying to protect the intellectual property of your business and everything you're trying to create. So I'm stumbling over my words here, but this protecting your business assets and that intellectual property is really a challenge, and that's what a lot of his lawsuits are about, which is exciting, and he knows his way around a courtroom. He's at the law firm of Mashoff and Brennan, and I want to give you a little bit here. He's in patent and copyright and trademark litigation. He represents clients in mediation and arbitration matters. He's admitted to practice in federal court in both California and Utah. And living here in Southern California, I've had the pleasure of going to lunch with him recently and was just really impressed and wanted to have him on the show. Tyson, welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm sorry I stumbled over your business model a little bit. What's IP? You know, I got to explain that. IP, I can't just say IP. You know, I got to kind of explain that there.
No problem.
Thanks for finding some time to be with us. Now, also, we've got a regular guest on our show that many of you know. He gives us a tip every once a month, typically, is Jerem Bergeson. He's a lawyer in our firm, KKOS Lawyers. licensed in 3 or 4 states, and also in a big international litigation case right now. He's got clients in Italy that have hired him to fight a case in Utah, and he's been bucking hard to get a trip over to Italy to meet with the clients. I don't know if it's going to come together, but Jerem, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, how's that going? Have you got your ticket yet? Are you going to get over to Italy anytime soon? How's that coming?
I'm thinking maybe if I beat you in a game of one-on-one basketball that the firm can spring for me to go over to Italy. Well, I guess we'll see.
Ooh, okay. All right. Old school, I can take it. Old school
yeah.
can handle you. Yeah. You just
I'm not quite as old school, but pretty close.
I don't think they were calling me old school because of my old school moves. I think they hadn't even seen me play yet. That was just my general appearance. It was the problem. All right. Well, okay. Well, Tyson and Jerem, thanks for joining the show. At some point in this conversation, Jerem, we want to go to the article that you helped co-author today on the blog on the California corporate maintenance topic. This is big for our California clients. We've got, of course, even international listeners here, so I don't want to waste a lot of time on the California topic, but we'll hit it quickly. But before we get there, Tyson, I want to pose the first question to you, and let me kind of frame this here. As I introduced Tyson, many of you, of course, as I tried to explain it carefully, he's in IP litigation. That's intellectual property litigation. So what he's doing is trying to protect people's patents and copyrights and intellectual property. Well, the other day I was watching this made-for-TV show where they were talking about how they made the TV show, and they were saying that the producer kept saying this over and over again, that he said the success of a movie is based on how much time you do in pre-production. I said if you do pre-production to the T, you know, what scenes you're going to shoot what day and working out all the issues with the script and the actors and the locations and all this stuff. He says if you do all that pre-production planning properly, the movie is such more of a success. And so I've been thinking about on my drive into work today, and Tyson, I really wanted to pose that to you, is to that pound of ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Could you comment on that in the cases that you've worked on? And just give us maybe a few thoughts and feelings on avoiding a lawsuit through better pre-planning. Any examples or feelings you have on that?
Yeah, I think that's right on. And I think the analogy to the film industry is very good. Almost on a weekly basis, I'll have a client come to me with an issue. For example, I had a client come to me last week who had already invested time and money in forming an entity, going out and advertising, and come to find out there's a company that has registered a trademark, and they can no longer use the name of their company. So they've come up with this name, they've invested money, they've put money into R&D, and now they have to go out and they have to notify everybody that they need to change their name because this other company had already registered a trademark preventing them from using their name. So it's a big problem. If they would have just come to us before they started the company, before they chose their name, while they would have had a little bit of additional cost up front, they would have saved themselves a huge headache on the back end. And now they're having to go out and reach out to some of their customers and their vendors and try to sort all this out. So it's absolutely true that a little bit of planning up front can save a huge headache on the back end.
When it comes to, and there's so many different topics here. I mean, this is and folks, please know, this is a really challenging topic to cover in a show because it could be a full-day seminar on how to avoid a lawsuit. So I'm going to just throw out some different topics. I'm just going to throw it out there. Tyson, what's your feeling about contracts? Like when you think of contracts and avoiding a potential lawsuit, what's your initial reaction? For all the listeners out there, what are maybe a couple thoughts of folks when you do your contracts? Probably the first one is have a contract. Don't do it on a handshake or an email. We're going to take that as a given. If you want to avoid a lawsuit, don't do it on a handshake. But what are some other thoughts that go into a contract that's well written, where it really does prevent a lawsuit down the road?
Sure. I think First, you need to involve an attorney, somebody who knows your business. I think a lot of times what happens is if somebody does take the step of hiring a lawyer to take a look at their contract, that lawyer really needs to know how your company operates. If he or she doesn't, they're going to miss details that are later on going to cause ambiguity, they're going to cause disputes, and it may ultimately lead to expensive litigation. So I think you need to involve a lawyer and somebody who knows your business well. Another strategy that I like to employ is I like to include, in the right circumstances, some type of alternative dispute resolution. So if there is some dispute between the parties over the term of the contract, then the parties basically waive their rights to sue in an ordinary, you know, in a regular courtroom, and you agree to some expedited, cost-effective approach to resolve the dispute. So you may agree to mediate your dispute or have an arbitrator resolve your dispute, and you can actually agree to cost-saving mechanisms through that same clause. So, you know, first of all, you take the steps up front to make sure you have a solid contract, but then you incorporate in the contract some mechanism that where you can effectively solve any problems that you have and keep costs down.
Great comment. And I noticed in your bio, your secretary sent this over, and it was just incredibly, you know, all the things you've accomplished. And it's highlighted here, of course, that you've represented a lot of clients in mediation and arbitration. I'm going to just say it because I think a lot of attorneys think this, or maybe even people, just business owners, they think they're selling themselves short or they're giving up something to go through a mediation or arbitration. Do you think nowadays that mediation and arbitration really is that much better than court, or are people giving up some sort of claim or, you know, this cause of justice that I've got to go to court? Maybe avoiding court with a mediation or arbitration clause is a great way to avoid court, but are you cutting yourself short? Are you leaving something on the table? What are your feelings?
I think in some cases you probably are leaving something on the table, and it's hard to categorize those all, you know, here in the call. But I think just generally speaking, if you had some claim that would really speak well in front of a jury, maybe your claims are not as legally as strong as they could be, but you have a very sympathetic story or a sympathetic set of facts, then I think maybe mediation and arbitration, you know, could sell yourself a little short. But I think in the vast majority of cases, you know, there are well-qualified arbitrators who have, you know, either been practicing law for a long period of time or they are retired judges, and they are very effective at interpreting and applying the law. And I think a lot of times both parties would do themselves a huge favor in agreeing to some alternative process like this, because it's much quicker. You can save a lot of expenses, and that allows somebody to continue operating their business. I mean, this, to be involved in a lawsuit can be, for a large company, it's a little different, but for a small to mid-sized company, it can be devastating. Not only do you have the cost and expense, but you have the added stress, and then you have, you know, the downtime that you're going to face every day focusing on the lawsuit instead of making money and running your company. So an arbitration can be a good way to mitigate some of those downsides.
Love it. Great comments. Jerem, what are your thoughts on contracts? I bring this up because I think if it's not divorce, contracts have to be far and away probably the second most common form of litigation in court. We know wrongful deaths and injuries are in the mix, but if it's not divorce, it's got to be contracts. When you're meeting with clients, what are some things that you make sure you talk about to help them avoid getting into a lawsuit when they sign a contract?
you know, like has been mentioned, obviously have a contract, first of all. That's with a lot of the folks I talk to. That's something that we have to kind of get over, is that hurdle that, well, I do deals on a handshake. Well, that's asking for a lawsuit. So first of all, let's have a contract. We talked about that. And the other thing that I think is important to think about is when you're formulating a contract, you're getting started in a relationship, a business relationship with another party, which is what a contract is basically memorializing, is let's think about the end. Let's begin with the end in mind. This probably isn't going to be a perpetual contract. It's not going to go on forever. Let's think about how and when the parties can get out of this contract. Is there a set time? Is there a set of circumstances that we can get out? The ADR, mediation, arbitration clauses are excellent as well. I mean, I've been through an arbitration recently where, you know, I'm sure our client saved thousands of dollars in costs by going through arbitration instead of going through litigation in a state removed from the state where he was located. So, you know, those are the things that I think about. Is, yeah, hopefully this is going to be all roses and happy, but if it's not, how can we efficiently and reasonably and fairly end this relationship? And you can build provisions into contracts thinking about that, termination provisions and alternative dispute resolution provisions. Those sorts of things are important to think about, and it's important for both sides to be thinking about that, so that nobody feels as though, well, your attorney just kind of wrote this legalese contract, I didn't know what it meant. And there aren't any hurt feelings about that going forward. I think communication between the parties and the attorneys involved is really important.
Well, let me throw in my two cents too, if I could. Great comments, Tyson, Jerem. Folks, again, if you just joined us, we're talking about how to avoid a lawsuit, how to win a lawsuit. We'll come to that in a moment. But let me just add a couple points too. Our show 2 weeks ago was on solopreneurs, solo entrepreneurs. And I think the far majority of our listeners are 1 to 2 to 3 person teams, oftentimes 100% owned businesses by one individual or a couple. Let me make a couple points. First of all, contracts, you don't have to spend thousands of dollars when you're a small entrepreneur with a lawyer to just do a contract. This could be someone doing a rehab on a building. It could be a joint venture on a wholesale project, just like what Jay Massey was talking about a minute ago. It could be a very simple project, but can blow up into a huge fight. Huge fight. I just had a conference call with someone yesterday that was just a $5,000 deal that could end up being a $20,000 deal once everybody's done fighting about it. And so even on these little small deals, pull out a piece of paper or open up your Word document and do a 1 to 2 page contract. And I love what Jerem just talked about too. Plan for the worst case and plan for the best case. Write it down. Just write it down. And as Tyson said earlier, get an attorney involved for just an hour. Just hire an attorney for an hour and say, review this, see if anything's crazy, add an arbitration or mediation clause, see, is there anything I'm missing? And I love what Tyson said, hire an attorney that knows what type of business you're doing. If it's real estate related, make sure your attorney at least understands real estate deals. And then just have an attorney say, you got 1 hour. Look at it. Tell me what I need to worry about. Boom, boom. And a good lawyer, they want your business for the future. They're not going to soak you for 3 or 4 hours and $1,000. Just tell them to have an hour, do a 1 or 2 page agreement, and write it down and just put it in the drawer. And then heaven forbid something happens, you've got it there. I think that's just so, so important. That's my two cents. Now, Jerem, if you've got to go to court, let's say you get that new client that comes in and is this kind of maybe a transitionary statement as well as, you know, staying out of court, but you know, maybe you have to venture there. What are some things that you just want to sometimes reach across the table and grab your client and go, why did you do that? You know, like, what are some things that you wish the client would have done that are going to give you a more upper hand in a lawsuit scenario? What anything come to mind?
Well, what comes to mind for me is in a litigation situation, it matters less what actually happened and matters more what I can prove happened or what I can prove was the agreement. I need evidence. I need to be able to take to a judge or jury or arbitrator documents, testimony about the situation, about the contract, about how the contract was fulfilled, what was or wasn't done. And in that vein, and I know this is difficult for people too sometimes, but you've got to keep and you'll be pleased as punch if you do, if you're in a lawsuit situation, keep good records, keep your emails, keep
great
letters,
point.
those sorts of things, so that you've got documentation about what was said, what was done, what was promised, what was supposed to happen, and what did or didn't happen. I'm not telling people to record their phone calls, but even if you could, phone calls, phone records, who did you call and when? Those are things that we need in order to be able to prove that the situation is what you say it is. So the better organized and the better records you're keeping, the better off we're going to be.
I like it, and I know you were trying to quote Tom Cruise in A Few Good Men. It doesn't matter what you can. It doesn't matter what the truth is. It only matters what I can prove.
What
I
can
can't
prove.
Remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great line. Well, and let's even jump over to another Tom Cruise quote. Tyson, if you remember, Jerry Maguire, help me help you. So, Tyson, if you've got that client there and you just want to scream at him, help me help you, what are some things the client could have done better? Again, repeat some of the things, Jeremy. I thought that was great. Emails, correspondence. What comes to your mind when you want to win that suit that you wish a client brought you?
It almost always comes down to organization, just like Jerem was saying. So many of our cases today revolve around emails, documents, that it really just comes down to the organization, because most of the time you're presented with the facts. They are what they are, and like Jerem said, it really comes down to a matter of proof. And always, the best cases for me is where my client can come to me and say, here's what happened, here are the days that it happened, and by the way, here are all the documents. And those clients always seem to have some set policies and procedures for documenting the transactions that they take a part of, or documenting the deals that they do. And they always have some clear guidelines on what to do with that. So I think that is the number one most important thing. But also, sometimes, occasionally, clients will make mistakes even post-lawsuit. I was saying keeping the emails and files is very important. Oftentimes, clients don't realize that email that they send out in the heat of the moment is memorialized forever, and that they can never take it back. The phone message that they left. So it's also very important to keep in mind what you're putting into written communications with another party, what you're saying in telephone calls. And once you actually get to the point of litigation, you should probably keep those to a minimum and just let your attorney represent you from that point forward.
I like it. Let me throw in 2 cents. I just want to say this, folks. When you have that gut feeling, okay, and you all know this, so just, put down your hamburger for a second if you're listening live right now. Jeff, I know you're on a treadmill there in your basement in Utah running right now. So let me just say, listen to this. In your gut, I think all of us know when a relationship with a vendor, a client, a customer, a partner is starting to get questionable. And when we feel that, we've got to start taking the time to document. And I think all of us aren't terribly organized. I think man's nature is pretty much a mess anyway. But when we know that a deal's starting to turn sour, take that time then to build the records. Because I bet Tyson and Jerem, their lawsuits are usually something that happened 2 years ago. And you can't remember who you called when. You don't have you could have very well lost emails and messages and na-na-na-na-na. So when you know something's not going too well, expect the worst and start documenting. Because you put it in a file, maybe you won't need it, but start now. Because when the judge is asking for it, it could be a year or two from now, and it's going to be a lot harder to reproduce. Let me. I got an email here from one of our listeners. I didn't open up the lines today on a call on a topic like today. What happens is we tend to get calls of, hey, I'm in this bad lawsuit and someone, you know, and then the whole show twists and turns with this person situation. And I didn't want to go down that path today. I want to kind of talk strategy. But I just got an email from someone that's really a really good question. And the question was, Mark, could you ask your guests what strategies to take with the nasty letter when a partner or a customer or client breaches the contract? What strategies do you recommend with a nasty letter? I paraphrased a little bit there, but I thought was a great question. So let me pose that to Jerem since Tyson was just coming. But Jerem, what would you say when you do you think people should write their own nasty letter first? When should they engage the lawyer? How do you play poker with that? What's your poker strategy?
You know, you can do that. You can do the kind of the nasty email or the nasty phone call yourself, and you can even do the nasty letter. But there's something about, and not always, but many times, there's something about receiving that letter on law firm letterhead that the other side knows that you've got an attorney involved. That can be powerful. Not always. Sometimes people are involved in litigation all the time, and that's not a big deal. But there are other times where they haven't received a letter like that, or they don't very often, or they have before, and it was a bad experience for them. So knowing when the other side knows that you've got an attorney involved and that you've taken that step and that possible litigation isn't all that far behind, that can be powerful. I think the nasty letter is a really cost-effective way to avoid litigation, to get what you're looking for without having to go through the expense of filing in court. The other thing I would say about the nasty letter that's important is if you make threats in the nasty letter, you know, you must respond by XYZ time or I'm going to file the lawsuit. You need to follow through and get those things done so that that other person knows that you mean business. Sometimes it may be a bluff, and that's okay. But the more often you can follow through on your promises in those nasty letters, the better off you're going to be.
I like it. Tyson, what's your strategy? Do you have a different approach, or what do you think about the demand letter and when a client calls you to write a demand letter? What are some things you include or some things that you would caution clients about to help them ultimately win a suit if it starts to happen?
Sure. I think the demand letters are a good idea. And in almost all of my cases, I send a demand letter before initiating a lawsuit. And it's been a very effective strategy. I would say maybe in about 25 to 30% of my cases, we settle prior to even filing a lawsuit. So we'll send out, you know, a cease and desist letter and set forth, you know, enough substance that can demonstrate to their side that they have a potential problem here. You know, put forth some legal arguments and our position on that, and invite some type of settlement discussion. I try to keep my letters, the tone of my letters, fairly conciliatory. I don't try to be too threatening, but at the same time, try to be firm and let them know that if you're not able to resolve this short of litigation, that you'll be filing a complaint against them. When it comes to the company writing the letter themselves, I tend to discourage that unless the company has in-house legal department or somebody who's experienced in these type of matters. It's been my experience that sometimes the demand letter from the company itself will make concessions that didn't need to be made, or they just miss some legal issue that was important to put in the letter. So I think for it to be an effective demand letter, it needs to come from an attorney and needs to at least be reviewed by an attorney before it goes out.
Well, Tyson, many of my listeners here I've got to be impressed with how articulate you are. You're just so professional. I love this interview. You're exuding so much professionalism. So I am going to try to get you to put your hair down right here. I want to ask, on the courthouse steps, have you ever yelled at someone, "I'll see you in court"? I just want to know. Has that ever happened?
No, but I hope it does someday.
Okay, all right. You know, I know all of us kind of want to hang from the helicopter, from that little thing right below the helicopter, and, you know, to safety. You know, that's kind of one of my dreams. You know, I want to be on that little thing below the helicopter and fly away to safety. But that's also one of them. I want to be able to yell on courthouse steps, "I'll see you in court." Thanks, Tyson. Okay, now, Jerem, we've only got a few more minutes left here. So, okay, I want to know courtroom strategy here. I want to what would, you know, if you were on Nancy Grace's show, you know, Nancy's drilling you. She's like, "Jerem, what do you got?" You know, if you're in court, and I know both of you guys have had plenty of court experience, what are some things that, seriously, though, you want to tell your client quickly, just a couple points here, of things to do or not to do when they do show up at court or they're in the courtroom experience to help them win, you know, to a winning strategy? What are your thoughts?
You know, for me, I've dealt with a fair amount of clients that get really, really defensive in court when they're being examined by the opposing counsel. They will get defensive. You can tell that they're getting defensive. And it's hard not to. They will start to kind of talk back to the opposing attorney. And a lot of times that will turn people off, especially if you're in a jury trial. And it will with a judge, too. Judges don't like to see you disrespecting the process or disrespecting opposing counsel when they're just doing their job. So I always try to tell clients, if we're in a hearing, if we're in court, as much as possible, and I know it's difficult, to relax, to answer the questions truthfully, matter-of-factly, and not get defensive if at all possible, because it's easy to see when you are, and it doesn't come off particularly well. So as far as in-court strategy, relax as much as possible and just answer honestly. If you don't have anything to hide, then everything should be fine. But that's – just try to relax and don't be defensive. I know it's hard, but that's what I say to my clients.
I like it. What would you say, Tyson? Any kind of
I think Jerem's
I mean,
right
if
on.
You were in the area – Yeah, if you were in the Jody Arias trial and you had your chance here, it's, you know, what would you, right. any suggestions for Jody?
Yeah, you know, it's all about maintaining reasonableness. The moment that the judge or jury thinks that you're overreaching or you're being unreasonable, you lose a huge amount of credibility. So I think that is the number one key. I think Jerem's right on there. And then as far as – I think it's also important to have good communication with your lawyer. A lot of what we do in litigation is very deadline-driven. And so oftentimes there'll be – you know, the lawyer is seeking information from you or you're seeking information from your lawyer. It's always good to have – you know, I all my clients have my cell phone number. They can call me any time of the day. I think it's good to have a lawyer that's available to you and always willing to, you know, help you through the process, and really just to have the good communication there so that you can facilitate the process and get everything that you need so you can present your case to the court. That's very important.
All right. Love it. Guys, great comments. And as we're getting close to wrapping this up, I want to say thank you to Tyson Hottinger of Irvine, California, at Meshoff Brennan. If you've got an IP litigation issue, you want to fight tough, fight hard. Tyson, I'm just going to throw out there, how do people get a hold of you, too? What's your best phone number or email?
Yeah, sure, both. Either you can just go to our website. It's www.mabr.com. I've got a full profile on there. My email is thottinger@mabr.com, and telephone number is 949-202-1900.
Tyson, thanks so much for joining us in your busy schedule.
You bet. Thank you.
Jerem,
appreciate it.
Oh, you bet. Thanks. I love it. And good luck on that day in court statement someday. And Jerem Bergeson goes without saying thanks, almost a regular contributor to the show. Appreciate your comments. Jerem, good luck getting to court in Italy. You know, I'm hoping that happens for you.
I'm excited about it.
Yeah, and I'll see you on court. I'm sorry, I'll see you on the basketball court. Not in court, I'll see you on the court. So
there you go.
There we go. Folks, thanks for joining us today. And big thanks to Jaren Bergson and Tyson Hottinger on staying out of court, winning in court. And we're going to be back here again next Tuesday, every Tuesday at 11 a.m., talking about living the dream.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.